thank you for that warm welcome back to the House where I sat for 14 years. Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, Justices of the Supreme Court and Judges of the State Corporation Commission, ladies and gentlemen of the General Assembly, now in your 395th year of assembly, and my fellow Virginians, it's an amazing privilege to be back to address you one last time as governor for my annual State of the Commonwealth address. And I must note, because it's my last time before you, that the Speaker promised me all the time that I want. So get comfortable. For 22 years, I served with you here, first in this chamber as a delegate, then as Attorney General, and now the privilege of serving as your governor. Now, while this public chapter of my life draws to a close, I realize that I'm not the only one saying farewell tonight. So tonight I want to say on behalf of a grateful Commonwealth that we all salute the great service of our Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling, who has redefined his office as a jobs creator, a policy leader, and a cabinet member, and presided over the Senate with grace. Thank you, Bill, for over two decades of service. Probably be fishing on Monday. I also want to recognize the great service of the Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli and thank him for his solid legal advice, his strong conservative leadership, and his care for the disenfranchised. I also want to welcome the 16 of you new members who were sworn in earlier today. And I want to implore you, having sat in your seat 22 years ago, to never forget the thrill of what you've experienced today, because it will make you a better legislator. And I also want to say, welcome back, Cree. We love you. Governor Mills Godwin rightly said, there is no higher honor than being the governor of Virginia. Serving with you the last 4 years has been the greatest professional opportunity of my nearly 60 years of life. And so tonight I offer my profound thanks to the people of Virginia for their confidence when they elected me to this office 4 years ago. An average middle-class kid from Fairfax County getting the opportunity to sit in the same seat of Patrick Henry and Thomas Jefferson, the American dream is still alive. I've tried my very best with spectacular teamwork with you to serve you well. I think we've achieved many good things together for the 8 million people of the Commonwealth. Where some may have hoped for conflict, instead we work together to forge consensus. Where some might have preferred sound bites to solutions, we more frequently chose results over rhetoric. Now, I'm a conservative like many of you. I strongly believe that these are the principles that are right for America. Some of you are moderates, some of you are progressives, and I know you believe just as deeply in your ideas as I do. But I think what's important is that before we ascribe to any philosophical allegiance, there is one identity that comes first and that matters most. And that is that we're all Virginians. We were sent here to Mr. Jefferson's Capitol to be servant leaders of the people, to use the unique God-given talents that each of us has to expand opportunity, the American dream, for our citizens. Because they are all created in the image and likeness of God, and therefore all deserve access to equal opportunity and to pursue success in this life. So with that in mind, I believe the measure of our success is really fairly simple. Did we help create jobs and opportunity and make Virginia a better place to live, to work, to worship, and to raise a family? Did we support that single mother in Roanoke who's trying to raise her two little girls while she's working two jobs? Did we make dreams more attainable for that small businessman in Woodbridge, focused on helping his customers and growing his business? And did we lift up that man who made a mistake in Danville, who served his time and now wants to restart his life? Looking back, I can say without hesitation that together we have. And I'd say that the credit belongs to you 140 leaders here in this body, to a remarkable world-class cabinet, and to the input of the great citizens of Virginia these last 4 years. Because in this capital, we've debated passionately and generally civilly. We've worked together, and we've shared the credit. Because that's the Virginia way. That's what we've adhered to. And I think that our democracy in Virginia is stronger and better because of it. And in the waning hours of any administration, many want to talk about legacies. So I may disappoint you tonight, but I'd rather focus on our joint accomplishments. Because I think what we've been able to do is what the Boy Scouts told us to do. I only made it to second class, but I still remember this. And that is to leave the campground a little better than you found it. The gains we've made took patience, and it took leadership. And it took the mettle to demand change when the status quo would not deliver excellence in state government. And I think leadership is how, when we finally addressed Virginia's need for new transportation infrastructure after 27 years, the Speaker of the House, my dear friend Bill Howell, put his own name on the bill. I figured carrying a bill every 3 years wouldn't kill him. And turned out to be true. And when that bill came to the floor, Delegate Ansley Ware stood up to give that strong final speech in favor of its passage. You remember that? And so Ansley now got his train and promptly retired. Leadership's about how when we took office in January 2010, with unemployment at 7.4%, we laid out a comprehensive set of proposals to get Virginians back to work. And it was Senator Chuck Colgan, it was then Senator William Wampler, and then Delegate Lacey Putney, who came to me and said, "Governor, we'll carry those bills for you, along with many of you on both sides of the aisle." Leadership was about how when we passed the Opportunity Education Institution bill after passionate debate and said we will not tolerate a single failing school in Virginia, it was Delegate Algie Howell who stood on the floor and captured the moment when he said, "The next great civil rights battle is an educational opportunity, and today I challenge the leaders across the Commonwealth to join me in this fight." And you were right, Algie. Time and again, we've rejected the twin ideological poles and navigated towards some common ground to make the nation's best state even better. So looking at the last 4 years, I think something very important, if not remarkable, has happened. That is, Virginia's state government has worked and worked well. When I campaigned for this office, I got our message down to about three words on a bumper sticker. It was Bob's for Jobs. And, you know, what can I say? My mom and dad gave me a great name for politics. But, you know, it wasn't just a slogan. It was why I ran. It's what I wanted to do with your help. And that's why our chief priority has been pretty simple. And that is to put in place policies that are necessary to help our great Virginia free enterprise system create good jobs and opportunities for our people, and then basically get out of the way. So while there is so much that government should not do, there are those very limited but important areas where government must act to help individuals prosper and help the free market to grow. The wisdom of our founders and the lessons of history define the correct rules. An efficient government has an obligation to ensure that our businesses and our families have the modern transportation infrastructure that is necessary to get goods to market, mom and dad to work, and everyone to the soccer game on time. A responsive government provides our young people greater access and affordability at our top-flight colleges and universities so they can receive the skills necessary to land the in-demand jobs of the 21st century. A responsible government keeps its communities and its citizens safe and secure. A wise and frugal government, envisioned by the second governor, Mr. Jefferson, manages and funds its core functions well and then leaves the rest to individuals, to the family, to the faith-based and benevolent institutions, and to the private sector. So it's a balance. And I think by most empirical measures, we've struck the right balance these last 4 years in Virginia. Since we took office in January 2010, the unemployment rate has fallen from 7.4% to 5.4%. We now have the third lowest unemployment rate east of the Mississippi and the lowest unemployment rate in the Southeast. And now for those of you keeping score, like I do, with our neighbors, that's a full point lower than Maryland and 2 points lower than the Tar Heel State. We're doing pretty well here in Virginia. Over 177,000 net new jobs have been added, and more than 160,000 of those are in the private sector. You provided nearly $120 million in new economic development tools, the largest amount ever given to a governor, and I thank you for that. And the result has been 76,000 jobs and $13.6 billion in capital investment just from the projects announced over the last 4 years that were either assisted by the state or receiving state incentives. One of those projects was Bassett Furniture, a self-described 100-year-old Virginia startup and an integral part of the economy of Southern Virginia. Last month, we were able to use some of those resources in the Governor's Opportunity Fund to help that company expand its manufacturing plant in Henry County and add 25 jobs and spend $1.5 million in capital investment. Now, they invested in Virginia, and we invested in them. It's a good partnership. With us tonight in the gallery is Vice President Eddie White. And I want to say, Eddie, thanks for believing in Henry County, and thanks for believing in Virginia. Please be recognized. Now, Bassett would say they're in the right state to do business. And just recently, Forbes got it right again, moving Virginia back to number one as the most business-friendly state in all of America. I want to thank Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling, Secretary Jim Ching, Secretary Duffy, Secretary Haymore, and so many of you legislators have been on economic development trips, Delegate Jones, Delegate Cox, and Senator Watkins and others who've helped make this happen. Much of our recent growth has come from making agriculture and forestry, Virginia's largest industry, a key component of our business development and economic development strategy. Because with our top quality local products and our expanding world-class port, we are successfully selling Virginia to the world. Just the past few years, I've completed 9 international trade missions, and we've opened agricultural trade offices now in India, in China, in Great Britain, Russia, Mexico, Costa Rica. Last year, agricultural and forest product exports reached the all-time record high at $2.61 billion from Virginia, but there's a lot more to be done. In Beijing right now, they're drinking Virginia wine. In Moscow, they're eating Virginia beef. And in Tokyo, they're talking about Virginia natto soybeans, I know. And all that means more jobs back here in Virginia. While Virginia's economy has grown, we've worked hard and kept the size and scope of government properly in check. You remember we came into the office with a record budget shortfall totaling $6 billion. And now we leave office having posted four straight budget surpluses totaling a Virginia record of $2 billion. And I thank the Finance and Appropriation Committee members because I think we've budgeted wisely. We've held the line on growth in general fund spending. Let me give you the evidence. In the 9 years from fiscal year 2007 to what will be the projection for 2016 and the introduced budget, general fund spending will have grown by an average of only 1.2% per year. And that's far less than the rate of growth in population and inflation. We've reduced the number of non-higher education state employees by approximately 2,000 and took tough leadership from our chief of staff, Martin Kent, to get that done. And we've eliminated or consolidated 36 boards and commissions and 9 state agencies. So your Virginia government is now efficient and lean and doing more with less. Thank you for helping make that happen. And we've also dramatically increased our financial reserves by growing the rainy day fund from just $295 million 4 years ago to now just over $1 billion by the end of fiscal year 2016. And that's the fourth largest balance in history. Thank you, Secretary Brown, for your good penmanship. The budget I introduced uses debt conservatively to stay within our capacity limits while targeting important safety, environmental, and maintenance needs this session. It eliminates the accelerated sales tax gimmick for now over 99% of businesses. It beefs up a depleted literary fund to be able to build more schools and leaves the largest unappropriated balance since 1991 when the Rainy Day Fund began, just in case you've got some spending ideas on your own that you'd like to put in place. Happy New Year. I think we've been good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars, and we spent wisely on government's core functions. But nowhere has that been more evident than our commitment to core services than the work we did last session to pass Virginia's first sustainable transportation funding plan since 1986, the year Delegate Joseph Yost was born. He's still got some tread on him over there, it looks like to me. In an uncommon demonstration of election year bipartisan cooperation, something, unfortunately, we see fairly rarely at the federal level, we did it here in Virginia. The transportation bill passed with the votes of 44 Republicans and 43 Democrats. Virginia families and businesses finally got the infrastructure funding that should sustain us for generations. Before we passed that bill, though, we audited VDOT. We located every single dollar and efficiency that we could find. We used debt capacity to jumpstart about 900 projects back in 2011 for a short-term fix. We expanded the use of PPTAs to lead the nation in that category. But we knew it wasn't enough. The simple fact was this. The gas tax was only raising 46% of what it had in 1986, but the cost of asphalt was up 350%. We had a math problem. Traffic in Northern Virginia had become the worst in the country, Hampton Roads 20th, Richmond 60th. Virginians were wasting gas, late for work, hitting a lot of potholes. But now, thanks to the work that you did last session, our transportation system will receive over $6 billion in new funding over the next 6 years alone, with an estimated annual economic impact of $9.5 billion and the creation of 13,000 new jobs. Already we've seen what this funding means for our people. This past year, we advertised a Virginia record $2.5 billion in road construction projects. We finally have the resources to begin widening 64 from Newport News to Richmond. We've reached a crucial milestone with the long-awaited plans to modernize I-66 in Northern Virginia. Construction on the critical I-95 express lines from the Mixing Bowl to the Speaker's District will be completed in early 2015. We've begun the second phase of Route 460 in Buchanan County, and we'll start the new Route 460 in Hampton from Hampton Roads to Petersburg very soon. Phase two of the long-awaited rail to Dulles, the Silver Line, is now funded and will provide needed congestion relief for commuters in Northern Virginia. Amtrak service has returned to Roanoke for the first time in 34 years and will soon return to Norfolk for the first time in 35 years and will soon to return to Roanoke for the first time in 34 years. But all this is because you worked across regional and partisan divides that were long deemed unbridgeable and provided a modern, safe, and well-funded transportation system for our people. So I want to thank Speaker, Delegates Jones and Albo, O'Bannon and Cox, Senators Howell, Stosh, Watkins, Wagner, Norman, and many others for your leadership to be able to get that done. And I want to thank all of you for who voted for that bill, and the rest of you can still go back home and take credit for all the projects that we built. Now, it took bold action to get transportation done, but it took a lot of bold action the last few years with a lot of leadership to make significant reforms in our public education system. I still remember my dad saying, "To get a good job, you need a good education." So we're now helping more people gain access to that good education. Because the principle is this, that every child, regardless of social status, race, creed, or zip code, deserves access to a world-class education with a great teacher and a great school because they'll produce a great citizen. We increase the percentage of education dollars going into the classroom where kids actually learn from 61% to 64%. We've given parents now an honest view of the performance of their child's school with a transparent A through F grading system. We rewarded dedicated teachers with their first pay raise in 5 years and established an innovative performance pay system. We ended irresponsible social promotion of third graders who can't read at grade level and invested significant new resources in the remedial reading programs that those youngsters need. We effectively eliminated teacher tenure, raised the standards for degree completion, authorized Teach for America, implemented tuition scholarship tax credits, reduced bureaucratic red tape and local unfunded mandates. We expanded charter and virtual schools, created a teacher's cabinet, and nearly tripled the number of STEM academies from 8 to 22. And after this year's budget, if you approve my recommendations, we will have funded the standard of quality now with over $500 million of new money for K-12 this year. But more importantly than all that, here's the results. Graduation rates in Virginia are up 8% since 2008. The dropout rate is down 6% since 2012. And the reading scores for our fourth graders are 10% higher than the national average. That's progress. Thank you. And we've taken a tough love, zero-tolerance approach to chronically underperforming schools by creating the Opportunity Education Institution, allowing the state the authority to turn around and manage failing schools. Delegate Howell is right. This is the civil rights issue of our time. In the eighth most prosperous state in the nation, how can we tolerate a single child going to a failing school in Virginia? So as I leave office, I implore you, let OEI demonstrate that it will help those non-performing schools in Petersburg and Norfolk and Alexandria and other places that might come online. Knowing that some children aren't getting the same education as other kids just one school district away is just not right. So the time for excuses is over. It's now time for excellence for all our students. But when young kids graduate from a high school, they must be either career ready or college bound. Because if they're not, you failed, I failed, and they fail. Because in the globally competitive economy that we live in, employers demand more people that are well-educated and well-trained for diverse but very specialized missions. Working together, we've made Virginia's colleges and universities much more affordable and accessible these past few years. With the budget recommendations I've made this session, we will have reinvested nearly $600 million in new funding in our colleges over just 5 years. This budget also provides the highest TAG grant awards in the history of our state at $3,300 per student annually. The past 2 years have also produced the lowest average annual tuition increases in well over a decade. But our students are still graduating with far too much debt. The Top Jobs Higher Education Act of 2011, TJ21, created that blueprint for the future and put us on track to award an additional 100,000 new degrees over the next 15 years with a focus on the STEM disciplines. Already, because of your work, 14,000 new slots have been added for Virginia kids. We've also required our universities to be much more accountable in their spending by reallocating resources to the top priorities. My budget also contains a new funding formula that rewards performance in education and compliance with our legislative goals. And I ask you to please enact it and make it work. Every new acceptance letter that hits a mailbox in Virginia Beach or Tazewell or Arlington is a testament to the progress we've made and a passport for another young person to achieve the American dream. So I'm very grateful for Secretary Fornash and Siddiqui, Secretary Dyke, Senator Norman, Delegates Cox and Dance for leading the way on this very important reform. I learned as a young Virginia Beach prosecutor that public safety is the foremost duty of government because it secures our inalienable rights. Our crime rates continue to decrease in the Commonwealth, and Virginia now has the nation's fourth lowest violent crime rate and the eighth lowest property crime rate. That's progress. This is a testament, I think, to the years of tough sentencing and no parole laws that we've worked together to put in place. The major reforms you passed at my request significantly toughen the sentences and the laws for prosecuting gang members, child sex predators, and repeat drug dealers. However, justice is not fully served if we're only tough on the front end, but give no help to those who have paid their debt to society and want to become law-abiding citizens. Because you see, 95% of the people in our prisons are going to get out, and we want them to be good citizens, not to reoffend and go back to prison. And therefore, the smart approach is to combine tough sentences with targeted assistance to help those Virginians successfully reenter society. And that's why we've demanded over these years significant improvement in Virginia's prison reentry system, and it's worked. The success of these efforts shows that Virginia now has the second lowest recidivism rate in all of America. But I would say to you that statistics don't tell the full story. People do. So tonight we're joined in the gallery by Tamayo Holmes. Tamayo spent the better part of his teenage years on the street. He was dealing drugs. It was a road that led him to prison twice. But it was in prison that he found a way to get out of that sad cycle. During his 9-year term, he successfully completed a work training program where he earned a certification in the Groom Elite program in Virginia's horse industry. After being released, Mr. Holm used that training to open his own successful small business. Even better, he has reunited with his family and now serves as a positive role model to his daughters, helping them to make good life choices. Today, Mr. Holmes returns to the prison to teach other offenders those life skills and life lessons that he learned. So, Tamayo, we want to thank you for your character and for the positive example that you are setting. Because I hope you agree that in America, we believe deeply in the principle of second chances and redemption. So I was pleased to join many of you this summer on Churchill to sign an executive order for the automatic restoration of civil rights for nonviolent offenders. The sacred right to vote and other civil rights are ones that our men and women in uniform have died to secure. And so far, administration has restored rights to 8,013 people during the last 4 years. And while that's double the amount of a previous administration, I don't think that civil rights restoration should be subject to the arbitrary judgment of an individual governor. I think it should be a permanent part of our law. So therefore, in the coming years, I'm going to ask you again to take an important step for justice and pass a constitutional amendment to permit the automatic restoration of civil rights here in the Commonwealth. And while we talk about voting, I want to ask you to not forget that men and women in uniform today from Virginia are still defending that right to vote in foreign places. This summer, in a most special privilege for me of being governor, I was able to travel abroad and meet with brave Virginia warriors at Walter Reed and Ramstein Germany hospitals in the sands of Kuwait, and at the bases in Kabul and Kandahar. You know, we have one of the top National Guard units in all of America, commanded by General Long. And as we sit here comfortably and gather in safety for this speech, the soldiers of the 1710th Transportation Company from Emporia, Virginia, who I got to meet with while deployed in Afghanistan, are still there. Tonight, we're joined by Tabitha Rhodes, the wife of Commander Rodney Rhodes, and Sarah Talbert, the wife of Master Sergeant Albert Talbert, who's now in his third deployment to Afghanistan. Tabitha and Sarah, the people of Virginia thank you for your sacrifice. We commend the leadership of your husbands and all who serve with them, and we pray for their safe return next month. Let us recognize you. I want to thank all of you for the work that you've done to make Virginia the most veteran-friendly state in America. We've expanded the Wall of Honor at the Virginia War Memorial. Thank you, Delegate O'Bannon. We've provided for in-state tuition for veterans. Thank you, Delegate Cox. And we've created a world-class job placement program for our veterans. We've shown our love and appreciation for those brave few to protect our way of life. I'm also pleased to report to you that our progress extends to the protection of Virginia's natural beauty. Over the last 4 years, we've conserved 232,000 acres of open space. Virginians are enjoying cleaner air and water also. America possesses few treasures like the Chesapeake Bay, and each generation must exercise its stewardship over that resource. We've put $460 million collectively into water quality efforts, including the $221 million that you approved in the bond package just last year. We also invested $5 million in oyster restoration, and last year's oyster harvest was the largest since 1987. And we also have the largest blue crab population since 1993. So please keep up this progress because they taste great. And as they say, save the crabs, then eat them. Now, I also want to thank our great state employees tonight because they are the linchpin of Virginia's success. As you know, there's over 100,000 men and women that work every day tirelessly for the good of the cause, from Chincoteague to the Cumberland Gap, to serve others. We've tried to reward that service together. We provided the first pay raise for state workers in 6 years and 2 3% performance bonuses at Christmas in 2010 and 2012, with a third in my proposed budget for Christmas of 2014 that I ask you to approve. We helped secure the retirement for state employees by making the largest deposit into our pension system in the history of Virginia, $2.2 billion back in 2012. We also fixed the untenable cash position of VRS with major reforms to reduce future unfunded liabilities in VRS by $9 billion over 25 years. And I've included $315 million in the budget to fully fund the payback of previous deferrals and implement the graduated rate of 7% rate of return. On a personal note, I want to thank First Sergeant Mark Wiley and the great members of the State Police Executive Protection Unit. You serve around the clock, travel constantly. For the last month and a half, you've been guarding two governors. And you do it all with professionalism and character. And you become part of my family for these years. And we're going to miss you very much. Thank you for your service. We've also worked hard to try to improve customer service throughout government operations, but especially with Dr. Hazel's leadership in healthcare. We're launching the Commonwealth Coordinated Care Initiative to better facilitate care for those dual eligibles, that is, those eligible for both Medicaid and Medicare. And we save taxpayers an immense amount of money by expanding managed care for Medicaid statewide. Our Medicaid reforms implemented in the last couple of years with Dr. Hazel and Cindy Jones are already saving hundreds of millions of dollars annually. But we've also made the largest investments ever in Virginia's system of intellectual and developmental services, stemming from last year's settlement with the Department of Justice. As a result of that settlement, Virginia will provide 750 new Medicaid waiver slots and expand community-based services for individuals with ID or DD issues, in addition to providing transition funding for the closure of the state's training centers. In this biennial budget, I'm also recommending to you an additional $38 million for critical mental health services like crisis prevention and intervention, community-based mental health programs, and bed space capacity. Working with Governor-elect McAuliffe, we've also put in place an executive order to study in detail our mental health system and make more recommendations to you soon. Mental health challenges affect so many Virginia families. We all perhaps have a story to tell. I believe we have to do all we can to provide immediate help to those in need and comfort to those who hurt. We've also helped to bring a lot of joy into the lives of many people this past year with one of the most heartwarming and successful government programs that I've ever witnessed. The Virginia Adopts campaign, led by Secretaries Kelly, Hazel, and soon-to-be Secretary Holton, had a goal of matching 1,000 foster care children with permanent loving homes just within the last year. Well, I'm delighted to announce tonight that we are joined by the 1,000th adoptive family. The Blanchards have been foster care parents to over 20 children. And now they are welcoming Michael to the family permanently. Now, Michael, I know and I've heard that you're thinking about a professional basketball career. But I think you ought to try your hand at politics because they could really use you down here. Thank you, Blanchard family, for making Virginia a more loving place to call home. Ladies and gentlemen, you can see adoption is working. It's creating families. It's saving taxpayer dollars. So that's why in the introduced budget, I've recommended $10.3 million to expand foster care and adoption support to age 21. And I hope you'll approve that change. We've supported families in many other important ways these last 4 years. And I'm so pleased to announce to you tonight that both the teen pregnancy and abortion rates have declined significantly in Virginia over the last 4 years. As you know, Virginia has the highest concentration of technology workers in all of the country. We continue to grow the Silicon Dominion with targeted legislation like capital gains tax exemptions for technology business, creation of an angel investor tax credit, and the very successful tax credit to attract data centers all over the state. We also dramatically reformed and improved the Virginia Information Technology Agency, VITA, expanded modeling and simulation opportunities, and just launched Mach 37, the nation's first cybersecurity accelerator. Looking forward, there are many important structural reforms in state government that I think you need to consider addressing, which I would have done myself if you had passed the two-term governor bill a few years ago. I think we need to reform the tax code for the modern Virginia economy. We need to reexamine the state and municipal authority and service level responsibility. We need to fight for a balanced federal budget and the restoration of federalism here in America. Thank you, Congressman Griffith and Hurt, for taking notes back there on that. And one day, you need to end the outdated and nonsensical state bourbon and vodka monopoly. Now, I'd say that if you work real hard, you can knock all of that out just in this session alone. We've made a lot of progress. But not everything has proceeded exactly as I had hoped. Because you've elected me as governor, but I'm not perfect. I've always worked tirelessly to do my very best for the people of Virginia. I've set exceptionally high standards for myself. But as a flawed human being, I've sometimes fallen short of my own expectations. While choices I've made have been legal, and as several reviews have shown, no person or company received any special benefits during our administration, I understand that there's been adverse public impression of some of the decisions and choices that I have made. And I've prayed fervently over the last months that the collective good that we have done would not be obscured by this ordeal. So tonight, I say to all of you and to all Virginians that I am deeply sorry for the problems and the pain that I've caused for you during this past year. Because the last 4 years have been very good in making this a true commonwealth of opportunity for all of our people. Unemployment's down 2 full points, and 177,000 net new jobs have been created. Tuition increases are down, and we're on our way now to 100,000 more slots for Virginia kids. A transformative transportation infrastructure bill has passed. Major innovative reforms of our public education system are enacted. Record budget surpluses are the norm. A healthier Chesapeake Bay, a much stronger pension system. And don't forget, we opened 19 rest stops and upped the speed limit to 70 miles an hour. So you can leave Richmond faster and safer. But in the years ahead, when I think back over the special 4 years together, it probably won't be the top line bullet points of these successes that come first to mind. Rather, I'll remember that we tried to follow the words of Jesus in the Gospels when he said to love your neighbor as yourself. And to take care of the poor, the hungry, the homeless, the prisoners, the little children, the mentally ill. I remember the 8 universities playing in the Governor's Holiday Hoops Classic and raising nearly $500,000 of food for the food banks, and the Virginia business that participated in the Governor's Food Bowl and raised another $1.1 million. I remember the deep emotion this past summer of walking the Richmond Slave Trail and seeing the echoes of the horrors at Lumpkin's Jail. And I ask you this session to approve that $11 million that I put in the budget for the establishment of a long overdue national slavery and heritage site here in Richmond. I'll remember the vision of Bob Sled working for free and Pam Kestner, who created our first statewide housing plan and found new resources for the effort. It led to a 16% reduction in homelessness in Virginia last year. And I'll definitely remember visiting and embracing so many of the brave people in Glade Spring and Pulaski County after the devastating tornadoes that struck in 2011. And perhaps more so, the incredible outpouring of love and support and generosity from Virginians who in just a month donated $1 million to the newly created Disaster Relief Fund. In short, I'm going to remember the caring, generous, and good-hearted people of Virginia, because we do live in the most generous nation on earth, the United States of America. We live here in the place where America was born. And now you have the opportunity to play a pivotal role in where America goes from here. And as you do, I want you to remember the image of George Washington on his knees at Valley Forge in that miserable winter of 1777 to 1778. And remember that America began on her knees. I want you to remember the words of his first inaugural address. Words he expected to ring through the ages, I believe. He said, "The propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right, which heaven itself has ordained." So tonight, I ask you to breathe those words and those images deep in your heart. I ask you to embrace and work with this new administration. Work where you can with Governor-elect McAuliffe, Lieutenant Governor-elect Ralph Northam, and Attorney General Mark Herring, to continue to make Virginia the great commonwealth of opportunity for all of our people. I want to thank you for your incredibly warm friendship, your strong partnership, your can-do, results-oriented leadership. And now, as I step aside from the very pinnacle of my life in public service, I want to thank God once again for making me a Virginian. And so may God in his mercy and his wisdom continue to bless you and all the great people of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Thank you very much.